You just mentioned the Mechanism Conference in 1946.
Yeah. When... Gee, I can't remember things at all. When did Cram do his first work? He got his PhD here with Fieser.
Yes.
Went out to UCLA, and his first two papers immediately put him on the map. One would have invited Cram immediately after those papers, but I don't remember the date of those papers.
I'll have to check on that. I think the important thing for me is to find the list of people from that first Mechanisms Conference.
Yes, yes.
And I'm now searching for, if you have any ideas of who might have the records.
The conference was arranged by Paul and by Charlie Price.
Charlie Price doesn't have the records, and I just asked Paul for them. And,
I see. I really don't know. I'm quite sure that I don't have a list of the people.
You think that what? Just about when do you think physical organic chemists started calling themselves physical organic chemists?
Certainly by the time Hammett's book appeared.
All right, because that was called
physical organic chemistry. And I think that that crystallized the field. I suspect it was called physical organic chemistry before that.
Yes.
But certainly by 1940, when that book came out.
Do you think it was about that time that they sort of started to recognize themselves as a community, or do you think...
No, the recognition of the community was earlier than that. There was no question that there was, you know, a community, even when it was Bartlett, Hammett, Freeland, and Pauli. And I knew I belonged to that community.
Okay.
And that it was that community when I was a postdoc with Hammett.
Okay. Yeah, that's an important thing.
There was a feeling that they existed, whether we called ourselves physical organic chemists. I wouldn't know. I'm looking down the list of members of the National Academy. And it is surprising how few physical organic chemists of any considerable age are in the list. Streitwiser and Weiberg are a good deal young.
Yes. Yes. I think they didn't enter graduate school until after the Second World War.
Another thing one could do is look down the records list in Hammett's book.
He didn't reference the authors.
Yes, he did.
He did?
He didn't have an index.
Okay, yes, but he did write. Okay.
But they're
look at the footnotes, right. Yeah.
Footnotes. I open immediately to Robertson, Kimball, Bartlett, and Tarbell. I think Bartlett and Tarbell was 89% Bartlett, 11% Tarbell. Eyring's name is here. I don't know whether you call Henry Eyring a physical organic chemist or not. Certainly he made an enormous contribution Charlie Price goes all the way back. He was in graduate school when I was.
Yes.
Maybe somewhat younger than I was. It was all the way back. So. But I don't know when he surfaced in the sense of. One really should have included Hirkel in any list of physical organic chemists.
Right.
Of the day.
Right.
I don't know when he promulgated his 4N+2 rule.
Okay. Now, it was
there were two Hirkels.
That's right. And he was not the one who wrote the book, I don't believe.
There's Ernst and Walter, and I get them mixed up.
Okay.
But the Hirkel of the 4N+2 rule.
That's right.
Whichever one that is a has to be prominently
okay.
Now, listed.
The one, I think the other one was the one who wrote the book, as I vaguely remember it now. And but his contributions, as far as research is concerned, are, as far as you remember, not terribly significant.
That's
a question rather than a statement.
You're pushing me very hard.
Okay.
My recollection is that one of the Hirkels did very nice work on stereochemistry. And one of the Hirkels was a physical chemist who promulgated the 4N+2 rule.
Yes.
Now, I thought it was the 4N+2 rule man who wrote the book.
Okay.
But I may have it.
I'll check that out.
I may have it backwards.
Yes. Okay.
I haven't hit any names here that. Really, that I feel have been omitted from the 1940 conference. There are a lot of names here other than those that we've recited. But, one might have invited actually Charles Hauser because of he really understood more about condensation reactions and what drives them.
Mm-hmm.
Than anyone else. And then in I probably omitted somebody, but I don't see just turning the pages and looking down this list many people whom one would describe as physical organic chemists of any prominence.
So,
by the time you got up to 46 that conference that Barton and Price held, there may have been more free radical chemists that one would have included. I think one would have invited Mayo. And maybe would have invited Mayo by 1940. I don't know when Walling got into the free radical business.
Well, he worked for Karosh in the late 30s and then went into industry, and I don't know when he published.
I don't know when he published Independent.
Right.
So I don't know whether one would have known to invite Walling. Or not.
I'll be talking to Walling soon, and I'll ask him when he would have been invited.
When he would have been invited, yes. I wonder who was at that conference. Somebody's gray or... I don't know whether one would have invited Weldon Brown or Newell. The most prominent work he did certainly was the exploitation of lithium aluminum hydride. And that was post-war.
Mm-hmm.
So he wouldn't have been there, I don't think, in that conference which was immediately post-war, before any of the... Well, before Weldon had a chance to do that work. Swain, I think, would have probably been at the 46 conference. I'm sure he would. My memory's going bad. There was a physical organic chemist briefly at the University of Illinois who died in an airplane crash.
Elliot Alexander.
Elliot Alexander, yes. I think he had begun to publish by then, though I'm not entirely sure. I think this is way before Kornblum did his work on the diazidization reaction. After he did that work, one would certainly invite him to any conference on physical organic chemistry he was giving. I don't know how old Roberts is, but I don't think he existed in 46.
Yes, he wrote about the mechanism conference, so I think he was there.
You think he was there?
Yes, I just read something about it.
So. Jack Roberts is certainly a physical organic chemist to be reckoned with. If the only question one is asking is
how old he is.
how old he is?
Yes. Right. Okay.
And I think, as we said, I think Streitwiser and Weiberg are too young.
Yes.
To have shown up at that time.
Yeah, I think that's very helpful.
I don't know. That's probably about what it is. They're undoubtedly missed people. One always misses people.
Yes.
Sometimes very prominent people.
Okay. Well,
I think what happened, though, was...
Do you remember where the conference was? Maybe that will help me in searching out the records.
Yes. The conference was at Notre Dame. And Charlie Price was at Notre Dame at the time.
Yes.
The university might have a record. Very interesting to see who was at that.
We've sort of brushed on this question a couple of times. We talked about the fact that there was a lag of almost 25 years between Lapworth and the new beginning of physical organic chemistry.
A man named Dawson in England is the only feeble thread that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing reaction kinetics on halogenation. All on Lapworth, and perhaps dressed up a little bit from knowledge of Bronston and Lowry.
Mm-hmm. One of the possibilities for explaining the
lag?
The rebirth or the new birth or the birth itself is the fact that Lewis Bonding theory came out and was by mid-1920s being accepted by most everyone.
The what and theory?
The Lewis.
Oh. Bonding theory.
Bonding theory.
I just didn't hear the word.
I suspect that you knew pretty much about bonding by the time. Do you remember whether they were teaching it in as an undergraduate?
We had the two electron bond and the Lewis octet. Yes.
Okay.
As an undergraduate.
All right.
Yes, I remember sitting around with my friends in our own class in advanced organic chemistry, and wondering what was wrong with the idea of describing benzene as just having three electrons in each of those bonds instead of two in one and four in the next.
Okay.
So we were clearly talking about that sort of thing at Dartmouth in 1931, 1932. I don't know why the lag and why the rebirth. My aphorisms is that nothing fails like success. I believe that organic chemistry, in a sense, went wrong because the German technique for carrying out organic structure determinations and synthesis was so successful that great work on steroids and alkaloids went forward so well on this process in German labs of getting very skilled laboratory people who worked terribly hard and tried innumerable ways of doing things based upon a thorough knowledge of the literature of what people had done before. And with that equipment, they were able to do things so that I believe there was almost a scornful attitude toward Lapworth and the other people who attempted to do theory as people who were just wasting their time describing, the angels on the head of the pin business. That it wasn't really of any significance, because significant things were the business of making new drugs and discovering the structure of alkaloids and the coloring matters in plants and so on. And you did this by this method of hard work and vast knowledge. And it seems to me that it took a long, long time to build the theory of organic chemistry to the point where it became useful, took over organic chemistry and became incorporated into it in the way you've already discussed when we were walking over to the faculty club, so that it doesn't exist really as a separate discipline anymore. And what it seems to me Woodward did was to show that if you apply theory You could run rings around the people who did it by the old-fashioned German way. But the whenever anything is very successful, it seems to me, it is continued longer than it should be. That's what I mean by nothing fails like success. And that, I think, is the reason why the Lapworth initiative was not picked up. If I can recite a story on this subject that is peripheral in a way, one of the historians of science, one of the very good ones, whom you must know, is Cyril Smith, who is an historian of metallurgy, as well as a metallurgist. And he and a German scholar got together to translate I think it was 15th century, maybe 16th century, book on metallurgy, which Cyril couldn't do because his knowledge of very old German is inadequate, and the German scholar couldn't do it because he knew nothing about metallurgy. Well, I read part of that book. Fascinating. And if you allow for the fact that you have to translate their terms into modern chemical terms, the metallurgy wasn't bad. And I said to Cyril, 16th century or whatever it was, metallurgists really did very well. He said, yeah. I said, another way of saying that is, you boys haven't learned much in the last 500 years, have you? And Cyril said, well, in a subject like metallurgy, that is so vital to the human race, there was an enormous amount of empirical work. So much empirical work that it has taken centuries for theory to catch up. And I think the same thing happened to a lesser degree in organic chemistry. The drugs and natural products were so important that an enormous empirical effort, or semi-empirical effort, it wasn't really empirical, but semi-empirical effort, went into it. And it took a long time for theory to catch up. And during the period when theory was hopelessly in arrears, people didn't bother with it much. Just as during those centuries when the theory of metallurgy was hopelessly in arrears, no one bothered with it. Because there wasn't any chance of doing anything in the theory of metallurgy that could be applied relative to this great body of empirical knowledge. So that's my explanation of this lapse. And what I find more remarkable than the fact that physical organic chemistry did not develop was that a few people like Mervine and Lapworth did see this opportunity and did do marvelous things. That seems to me the remarkable thing, in that the lapse is caused by the great success of doing things in a semi-empirical way.
Maybe we've already covered this, but about a year ago I had a short conversation with Phil Skell, and he said physical organic chemistry is dead, and those people who practice it now are merely adding additional digits to already well-known numbers. Would you have any comment on that, or do you really think physical organic chemistry is organic chemistry today?
To a large extent, I think it is. However, I don't think organic chemistry is dead at all. I think it is, has been, a phase of it has been destroyed by its own success. But there are other things that are coming along and that will constitute new revolutions and a new birth of physical organic chemistry. Now when I say that, I would like to go back and restate it. It is my belief and hope that that statement is true. I don't know if that statement is true. It's a prediction. The things that are coming along, it seems to me, are the following. First and foremost, about a third of every journal in the American Chemical Society is crammed with articles on quantum mechanical, quote, computations, unquote. In my view, almost all of that is garbage. I gave a paper at the Lehrmacher Symposium this past, I don't know, May or whatever it was. You weren't there, were you?
No, I wasn't.
In which I plotted the experimental and calculated gap between the singlet and triplet states of methylene as a function of the year of publication. It's a case where the quantum mechanical calculations have not zeroed in within 10 kilogauss. I can show you the graph. It might be interesting to you. I don't know that I have it right at hand, but probably I can send it. Methylene has only three atoms in it. Two of them are hydrogen. Regardless of what the quantum mechanical calculators tell us, if they can't do methylene, it is quite clear that they cannot do pyridoxal phosphate. I talked to Bill Lipscomb about this, who is a quantum mechanical calculator, and said that I thought that most of the work that is now being published in JACS on these calculations would have to be redone in the future. And he said I was mistaken. It was not true that most of it would have to be redone. But all of it would have to be redone. What we are getting...
But before you leave that, the Lehrmacher's conference, Ed Thornton said that you had somewhat of a heated discussion with Henry Eyring. Was it over just this?
No, it was not. I looked at the history of physical organic chemistry and did not include among the great contributions of physical organic chemists the Eyring absolute rate theory, which caused Eyring enormous distress. That was a mistake on my part. I certainly should have known that. It is, I hadn't looked upon that as physical organic chemistry, but rather as something
that physical organic chemists
use.
Right.
But with the benefit of hindsight, I simply was wrong. I should have included that. That is what Henry Eyring got terribly upset about. Now, he also was upset because I criticized Bodenstein and pointed out how much superior Lapwer's work was to Bodenstein. It is a tenet of physical chemists that Bodenstein began reaction kinetics. And in that instance, Eyring and I strongly disagreed. I don't back off a half an inch from what I said. But he started with that, but then it became quite clear that my omission of the absolute rate theory was really what I had done in and gotten him so upset.
He was wrong.
We were we were talking about the future of physical organics.
Now it seems to me that what has happened is this: that the ability to calculate by quantum mechanics is at the moment inadequate, and large numbers of people are using various computer programs to grind out results mention of look, I'm gonna, can I have a moment's intermission?
Sure.
Okay. Alright. I think that eventually the real mathematical physical chemists will work their way through to much better computational methods, and that the quantum mechanical calculations will come into their own and be an important aspect of physical organics. Physical chemists are just beginning to be able to handle individual solvent molecules on several levels, including the quantum mechanical level of calculation. The major problem of physical organic chemistry, which it seems to me remains to be solved, is the question of solvent effects, which are often enormous. To the extent that the major effects of solvent are simply withdrawing water from ions and producing